This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, a weekly podcast hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Full of Beans is here to share the unheard voices of those who are living with, supporting, researching, or working in the field of eating disorders. Each conversation aims to bring a different perspective and understanding so that together we can learn, advocate, and connect to realise we are not alone in our struggles and that recovery is possible. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode. And just a gentle reminder that these episodes are not a replacement for therapeutic support. So if you are struggling, please do reach out and know that there will always be someone there to listen. And finally, thank you to our podcast sponsor, Nightingale Hospital, for your continued support. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Harriet Parsons, who is the CEO of Bodywise, the Eating Disorders Association of Ireland. She has worked with Bodywise since 2005. A fully accredited psychoanalytic psychotherapist, Harriet holds an MSc in psychoanalytic psychotherapy from St Vincent's Hospital School of Psychotherapy, UCD, and an MA in addiction studies. It was a real honour to speak to Harriet today about the work that they do at Bodywise, in particular the support that they provide to families and carers who can so often be impacted by eating disorders when their loved one is struggling, but unfortunately don't often have the support that they deserve. I really enjoyed this episode learning more about Bodywise's work, and I hope that you get insight and support from it too. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Harriet. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you, Hannah.
I'm very glad to hear it. Would you like to introduce yourself for the listeners?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Harriet Parsons. I'm currently CEO with Bodywise, the Eating Disorders Association of Ireland. I've been with the organisation for 20 years. So I joined in 2005. When I was doing my psychotherapy training, and I had done a degree in psychology, and then I had worked in the Rape Crisis Centre, and then I did an MA in addiction studies after that, and then I had my daughter, and when she was about one, I was like, okay, I have to do something, because I began my life, my working life as a dancer. I went to ballet school when I was 16 in Russia, and graduated from the Perm Ballet School in Russia, and then I was a dancer. So when Emily was about a year, I was like, okay, I have to qualify at something. And the psychology degree I had done was a psychoanalytic. So in my final year there, there was a part-time job as helpline coordinator advertised with Bodywise. And I had done all my theses on eating disorders, so it all kind of came together. And I applied for that job and got it. And I basically have been here ever since. So Bodywise itself is a charity and a voluntary agency. So we provide support, awareness, information, understanding to people affected by eating disorders in Ireland. So that's people themselves who have an eating disorder, but also the people around that person. So families, friends, and then the wider kind of community, I suppose, healthcare clinicians, other agencies, other listening services, schools, youth services. I always think about it, if you can visualize the person with the eating disorder in the center, and then you have all of those kind of circles coming out from them. So we provide support to all of those people. And so in terms of our support services, we have a helpline, we have an email support service. And in the last couple of years, then we've also developed a family support package. In Ireland, eating disorders was chosen by the HSC, which is the equivalent of the NHS, to develop what they call a clinical program. So a clinical program for eating disorders, which really was being developed to tackle, I suppose, the lack of specialist eating disorder services nationally, and that idea of the postcode lottery, that in some places there were a couple of clinicians who knew a lot about eating disorders, but in many, many places it was luck of the draw who you got. So when the clinical program for eating disorders was established and launched and the model of care, our organization was the support partner to that program. So that's when I kind of shifted from managing the services to developing the family supports, but also developing our professional training, which we do for the entire kind of healthcare sector and allied healthcare providers. So CAMS and AMS, clinicians, psychiatrists, psychologists, OT, SLT, nurses, GPs, but then also dietitians, then also kind of residential care home workers, foster carers, other clinicians who wouldn't come across people with eating disorders that often, but when they do, they feel they don't have the skills. And then just this year, then our CEO, Jacinta Hastings, retired, and I applied for the role as CEO, and so now I'm the CEO. So that's a brief history.
I think it's fantastic that you've literally gone from, you know, being like the call center assistant kind of thing to then being the CEO, because you've seen not only the journey of Bodywise from all over those years, but also I can imagine, you know, you understand the structure from the perspective of so many different people that are working within Bodywise. And I really love, you know, it sounds like the absolute pinnacle of what we're trying to achieve in terms of any healthcare professional that could potentially come across somebody with an eating disorder. Because as you said in that, you know, that list that you gave, it could literally be anybody. That, you know, it's not that, okay, you're a dietitian, therefore you're going to come across someone with an eating disorder, or you're a psychiatrist. It's the breadth of that. So it's amazing that that training is available. And is that something that is forced is the wrong word, but is that something that everybody receives in Ireland, or is that like an optional thing?
No, well, I suppose it's not. So within the psychiatry programs and that, there would be some knowledge around eating disorders. Within the universities, there would be some for some people. So, for example, in Trinity, there's a postgraduate diploma in, I think it's in youth mental health for nurses. And I worked with the professor in Trinity to help her develop the eating disorder module for that. And I would teach that every couple of years. So again, it depends on people coming to us and saying, I need this. A little bit of word of mouth as well. We get an awful lot of requests. So like in 2024, we had 52 requests. So it's basically doing one a week. I think with the increase in eating disorder presentations, and now because of the clinical program, because there's a recognition that it is an illness and that people are recognizing that they're not well and that they should go and seek help, that means that there's more of a demand on services. And so people are presenting to different places with eating disorders. And so people are coming across people with eating disorders and thinking, I don't know what to say. I'm afraid to say the wrong thing. I need to know the do's and don'ts of language. I need to know, do I need to weigh them? Do they need to know the number or not? Or do I need to set goals or not? Or, you know, I mean, as you know, eating disorders are incredibly counterintuitive. So there's loads of things that we might think are really helpful for somebody who's struggling that are really not helpful and backfire when we are supporting somebody with an eating disorder. And so people lack confidence. And it's a little bit of knowledge that can go a long way. It can really help them to feel more confident. And even things like getting the team to work as a team, to be able to go to their colleagues and say, okay, you know, there's this person who's come in to the hospital or the ward. We have these student nurses. Let's just meet and discuss the approach and discuss what the do's and don'ts are with that person who's on that ward. So it's really, really beneficial for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually did my master's project.
Yeah.
On putting together a training package for pediatric nurses that were on a general inpatient ward. And I found that really interesting because so many of the things that they would say in terms of a lot of things that, you know, for somebody just having an admission into hospital, like, you know, not eating a meal because they felt a bit poorly. Actually, for somebody with an eating disorder, you can't allow behaviors like that. But they were also saying how tricky it is. Because I always use this example. If someone comes in to the hospital and they've broken their leg, you know, it might be uncomfortable to be in a cast, but at the end of the day, they're grateful that you're putting the cast on them. And after a few weeks or months or what have you, they'll come back and you'll see that their leg is healed and off they go. Whereas with an eating disorder, it's particularly at the start, no patient is ever grateful or wants to get on board because you're asking them to do the hardest thing in their life.
Yeah.
And equally, particularly when you've got somebody coming into an inpatient ward, you're probably not going to see them get to a point where they are fully recovered or, you know, progressing on their journey because you see them for that short, intense period. So I think providing that training to people to get an understanding of eating disorders and how people may be different to your classic patient, I think that can be really important.
Yeah, it's so important. And it makes a world of a difference to be, you know, it really does, both from the clinician side, but also from the person side.
And I mean, another thing I wanted to speak to you today about, because I don't think that there's enough information out there at all, which is why I was really glad to hear that you guys have been working on it, is support for family and you know, the support system around somebody. Because
yeah.
It's like you said earlier, in terms of healthcare professionals that are supporting someone with an eating disorder, that can be anybody. And I also think that when an individual is struggling with an eating disorder, it's not just that one person that's impacted. It is everybody around them, whether that is friends or family members or colleagues. You know, if people know about it, then they are often questioning, what do I say? What do I do? How do I resolve this? So I'd love to hear some more about the support that you have for family members.
Yeah. So BodyWise, well, so our organization is 30 this year. And we were founded by a group of parents who had a child diagnosed with an eating disorder, and there was no support. Very little services, but no support. So our organization has always recognized the importance of supporting families. Our organization has grown out of that need. And so, you know, while we have lots of support services for the person with the eating disorder, we've always had alongside that services for family. So whether that's the helpline, the email service and support groups. And so we used to have, before COVID, you know, face-to-face support groups. We'd have one support group for people with an eating disorder and one support group for family and friends. And what we, you know, in supervision with the facilitators and thinking about it, I suppose what I found was that the family and friends group was actually much more challenging for the facilitators than the people with eating disorder group, because the family and friends group were more demanding. They wanted answers. They wanted knowledge. They had much more direct questions. And that really is a bit too much of a burden for the facilitators who are trained to provide, you know, non-judgmental listening support and group facilitation skills. But I mean, our ethos is it's not about what we think, it's about what's going on for the person. So in about 2017, we began to rethink how we delivered family support. And in 2014, we began to think about that. And we piloted a program which is called the Pillar Programme, which is, I suppose, based on the idea of peer-led resilience. So it's the idea of people coming together, sharing an experience or a concern, and building resilience from that shared experience. Yeah. And so instead of it being like a support group, what we did was we developed a 4-week program where one evening a week for 4 weeks, we would, you know, I suppose now we would think of it as a webinar or something, but then it was in person and it was an evening of psychoeducation, of support, of knowledge, of a space for family to ask the difficult questions and to tease out what the possible answers were. And what I've always said that Pillar to me is 4 weeks where it's a process of disillusioning parents that we have the answers, because on week one, they often come with all the questions.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Week 4, they realize that when they ask a question, I won't be answering them. I'll be helping them to think through, how can I figure out the answer to this question myself? Because we have to remember that everybody who has an eating disorder is different. Every family is different, and we're not part of that family, so we don't know. So we have to keep it really safe. So we developed the Pillar program, and, you know, I used to drive around the country Thursday evenings, you know, the length and breadth of Ireland, up and down, and do all of that. And, you know, it went very well. Wouldn't, you know, might come to Dublin twice a year, might go to Cork twice a year, might go to other places once a year. So there was huge demand for it, but that was all we could really manage. And then just before COVID, about a year maybe before COVID, Gillian Todd was over here doing a Maudsley workshop. And I went along and, you know, saw the benefit in the Maudsley Carer Skills workshop, got the manual, you know, was interested in the whole thing. And long story short, we then spent a year where we brought Jill over 4 times to Ireland to do 4 different weekend workshops. So I was with her for all of those workshops and shadowed her and kind of learned, you know, from doing with her. And then I went to Birmingham. She was doing a training with a CAMS team in Birmingham. And I went to Birmingham for, you know, the 3 or 4 days, and I did that training with her. And at that stage then, I suppose she felt and I felt that I was ready to kind of bring it back here now. So so I came back, and this was just before COVID, and then COVID hit and we had to take everything online. And actually, taking everything online was a great thing, because it allowed me to have the space and the time to really think about, OK, how are we going to provide Maudsley workshops to parents? Because I could really see the value of training parents and family in the skills to care for their loved one. And I love the way the Maudsley Carer Skills developed, you know, out of kind of an adult eating disorder ward, where Jill and Janet Treasure felt that they needed to get family involved, where they felt that, you know, people would improve when they're on the ward, but then when they went home, they would disimprove. And they were thinking, well, of course, because the family aren't trained to know what's supportive and what can really help encourage recovery. So let's find a model and train our families to be able to support better. And that's where the Maudsley Carer Skills came from. And I really loved that idea of training. So during COVID, then I had a guinea pig group, I call them, where we did like a workshop every second week for a year, where I did all of the workshops with them. We went through the whole thing. And after that year, then I reviewed and I thought, okay, what are the 8 key workshops to do with a group? And so we shortened it down and it's now 4 months, 2 workshops a month. And we do 8 kind of the key workshops from the Maudsley Carer Skills training. You know, we have the manual and all that. And so carers or supporters or whatever language you want to use. So they do the pillar program, which is kind of 4 weeks, which is kind of general. And then not everybody wants to do more after that, but those who want to do then can join the Maudsley group. So they can do a follow on 4 months of 2 workshops a month with us. And then following that Maudsley group, then once a month, I have a regular Maudsley group with people who've completed the 4 month series. And that's where we do refreshers or we do the other exercises that we don't get to do in those 4 months, or it's kind of like a support group through a Maudsley lens. And so that's ongoing and people can avail of that for as long as they want. So there are some carers on there who started during COVID. Some have come, some have gone, some have gone and come back. And, you know, it's totally up to the person how much support they want to avail of or not. We also have a post-pillar support group. So that's a support group that anyone who has done the pillar group can do. And we have 3 times a month, we have a post-pillar support group. And that's really because the numbers at our pillar program are so huge, like 72 last week when I did it. I'm doing it after our call today. Last week when I did it, there was 73 on it. We had 135 people sign up. So a lot of those 73 cameras would have double, you know, would have a couple on it. So with such huge numbers, you have to mute everybody. People can ask questions through the chat just to me, but they don't get to talk to one another. So we recognize the value of being able to talk to one another. So we have a post-pillar support group that kind of meets that need. And so we were doing the Maudsley workshops and that was all fine. And then I thought, you know, it would be great to pick Jenny Langley's brains about all of this. After all, she's the person who wrote the manual. She's the person who's continually doing the groups, her own groups, developing new resources, doing all these capsules. If you're on her mailing list, you know about that. So I got in touch with Jenny. I had met her years ago and I hadn't seen her for years. And I got in touch with her and I asked her, would she do a podcast with me where we would do a podcast on each little bit of the Maudsley Carer Skills that then could be used to accompany the workshops or for people to listen to after workshops to kind of reinforce the learning. And that's what we did. And really it came out of me just wanting to pick her brains about how does she do her workshops? Because I just trained with Jill. So I was really curious about how, you know, what does Jenny do? How does she approach things? You know, how does she teach in her workshops? And so that's been amazing, the podcast, because they're done for carers. But actually, when I'm going around doing clinician training, the clinicians are saying to me that they listen to the podcasts and they use the podcast for their own work. So it's actually got this lovely kind of feel of everybody learning together and everybody, you know, I suppose picking up on the importance of that supportive atmosphere environment and how to create it and how to kind of role model the change you want to see in another person and how to really affirm and really use language that's really helpful. How, I suppose, ultimately, how to make people feel safe enough and heard and to be able to meet people where they're at so that they might think about moving to a different place in their head or in their eating disorder. I mean, that's ultimately what we're trying to achieve, I think. But we're not focused on that. You know, we're focused on just in the moment, supporting the person where they're at.
It's interesting what you say about the podcast, because when I first started this podcast, it was very much, for, as somebody with lived experience who has an eating disorder, I didn't want anyone to feel alone, and I wanted to kind of share lots of diverse experiences. And now I get so many clinicians who listen to the podcast, or I get people say, you know, my therapist recommended that I listen to your podcast and they listen to your podcast. I'm like, wow, I didn't ever imagine that that would, you know, that it would be used as a tool. But I think it's, you know, from the sense of what you guys talk about in delivering the training, I think that will give so much insight into how to support somebody in their recovery, which maybe they haven't had access to that, to that training before.
Mm-hmm.
Just going way back, you said that when people first come to the Pillar program, they're armed with loads of questions, and then by the fourth week you're helping them get, like, understand that. So what would you say is the most common question a parent comes to, or a carer comes to?
I wouldn't say that there's one most common. There's kind of a theme of common kind of questions around the theme of how do I get them to eat? And the different kind of questions around, well, how can I get them to do whatever? And then it's really interesting, actually, as you go through the weeks of Pillar, at some point, somebody always puts in the chat, I see, it's not about the food, it's about how they're feeling. You know, that it just suddenly hits the person that actually it's about how they are and not what they're doing. A lot of questions around, what do I do if they don't finish the meal? A lot of questions around exercise. And you see, I think because Pillar is one of the first things that people do, the majority of people coming to the Pillar program are probably, their person is newly diagnosed, so they don't really know what they're dealing with. So you get a lot of questions around, how long is this going to take? And questions around, I do X, Y, and Z, will that make it better? That's why I say it's kind of a process of disillusioning them that there are answers. Because you come and the sense you get is that these parents, they're either coming with no knowledge at all, and sometimes that's maybe better, or they're coming having, you know, looked up everything and read everything, and they have this feeling that if only they work a bit harder at reading everything and finding out all the information, then they will find the answer that will make their child better. And I suppose when I say it's a process of disillusioning them, I don't mean that in a mean way. What I mean is it's a process of helping them to understand that it's not about finding an answer out there somewhere, that actually they find the answer within themselves, within their person, within the family dynamic and the treatment, and that they're not doing anything wrong by not having found the solution. You know, the other message I really give very strongly is that they are experts on their person with an eating disorder, and that they are the ones who knew them before they had an eating disorder. And so they have a huge value to bring to the recovery process. They have a huge role to play, which I think is very important. And also that it is possible to recover from an eating disorder. You know, after Pillar last week, a mum emailed me to say she could feel the tension leaving her body as she realised that I was saying it was possible to recover, that her young daughter would get better.
Well, I think that's why support groups, I think, are so important, in particular for loved ones, because, like, I remember my mum did a support group, and it was the first time that she actually, I think there's a lot in the media that's scaremongering, and, you know, having an eating disorder is basically a death sentence.
Mm.
So to be with other people and hear that recovery is possible, but actually the answer to recovery is probably not one that you will have. And in actual fact, you know, the best thing that you can do is to be there to support your loved one. And it's really interesting what you were saying. As you were saying, it made me think, often from my experience of having an eating disorder, it's about continually doing more, like you're not enough, so you've got to try better, you've got to do more, and then you'll you know, be this whatever this thing is that the eating disorder tells you. And it's almost like that eating disorder voice is mimicked by a loved one, in that you've got to support them more, you've got to help them more, you're not doing enough, and if you just keep doing a bit more, then you'll fix them. And you know, you and I both know, you know, you can't be fixed when you have an eating disorder. It's a long process, and it's a difficult process, but having people around you that support you with that makes it, you know, that slightest bit easier. But I thought it was really interesting, I've never thought about that before, how kind of the similarity between, you know, the quote unquote what people call an eating disorder voice, and then also, like, I guess the supporters, inner critic.
Exactly. Jenny and I did a podcast last week on perfectionism and eating disorders. And the first thing she said was, well, you know, when the carers come to the workshops, you know, they're trying to be the perfect carer. They're trying to get it absolutely right. And, you know, when we talk about role modeling being imperfect, that, you know, it's fine to say, oh, you don't have to be perfect, and then you're trying to be the perfect carer. That's actually counterproductive. You have to be able to role model not being perfect and getting it wrong. And a huge message in Pillar and in the Maudsley is that it's okay to get it wrong. The important thing is to be able to acknowledge that you've got it wrong, maybe apologize, and then make a change. And that's okay. You know, it's okay to say the wrong thing. It's okay to, you know, if you've upset somebody, you're trying to support, you're trying to figure out what the right thing is. So of course you're going to say the wrong thing. And eating disorders are so insidious and so complicated and counterintuitive. You know, they use everybody's weakness against them. They turn what are not.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Actually, good and supportive things into destructive things. So unless you're in that world of eating disorders, you're not going to know that. And I think, you know, for us who's in the world of eating disorders, we forget just how surprising it is that something like saying to somebody, well done, you managed to have that meal, well done, could totally backfire, you know. Or, I mean, this is something that I do with clinicians all the time. You know, rather than setting goals, goals will backfire. You know, if you set a goal, you'll reach the goal or you won't reach the goal. All or nothing, black and white, perfection or imperfection. And so rather than setting goals in treatment, experiment with different things. I suppose that's something that I've learned from the Maudsley and something that I bring into my own work and that I bring into our professional training. But you're absolutely right. You often see that repetition of carers wanting to be perfect and terrified of getting it wrong. And look, you can understand, you know, the physical risk in eating disorders is really scary. So, of course, it's terrifying. And I suppose that's why they need us around them to kind of help them experiment.
I think as well, I mean, just speaking from my personal experience, you kind of said it there, but the eating disorder is looking for anything to pick up on, to pull families apart, pull loved ones apart. And so I genuinely think that as a supporter, as a carer, you could say anything and it could be the most perfectly scripted thing. And we could sit here and say to you, yeah, that sounds perfect. That'll be fine. You know, that'll float really well. And it will go down like a lead balloon because I often think it's, you know, you could say absolutely anything and there will still be a way for the eating disorder to get in there. And when you were saying about, you know, comments that maybe people might say and not think, how would that, you know, negatively impact somebody? The one that I always think is, oh, you look so well. Mm. And as soon as anyone would say that to me, I was like, oh God, well, you know, that's just knocked me back 5 steps. Mm. But as you said, that's somebody saying that with such good intention. Mm. So I think that also as a carer, as somebody supporting somebody, you know, I know for me, when I was struggling with my eating disorder, I was looking for an excuse to push people away because I just wanted to be on my own. So when comments were like that were made, you know, I was riled and ready to get upset about what people were saying. And I guess just in that situation, because I know it's something that I quite commonly hear, for people listening, if they're like, yeah, that happens literally every day, I say something, it's taken the wrong way, the world implodes. Mm. What would be your advice to people supporting people to navigate that?
Well, I suppose to think about it. So the first thing is to recognize that that's happened. So, you know, if you say something and the world implodes and it doesn't have the reaction that you hoped it would have, acknowledge that to yourself firstly, you know, say, all right, that didn't work. I'm not going to say that again, or I'm going to say something different and try it out. If the person with the eating disorder is very, very upset, I think it's really fine to say, gosh, I can see that what I said has really upset you. My intention was to be supportive and I can see that it really wasn't. It would be really helpful for me if you could tell me what thoughts my comment triggered in your head so I can understand it better. So to use it as an opportunity for connection. You don't have to get defensive. You don't need to feel bad about it. It really is about acknowledging it. It's hard to do that.
But I think that, again, is another thing about support groups that is so helpful, because I know for my mum, when I was struggling with my eating disorder, she didn't have, you know, particularly when I had like my first episode of anorexia, I was 14. This is 15 years ago. There was no talk about eating disorders really in the media or anything. None of her friends had struggled with children that had eating disorders as much as she knew. So she didn't, you know, she felt very ashamed that her daughter was the one struggling. So she didn't want to talk to anybody about it. And so I think that's the amazing thing about support groups, is that my mum went along and other people were struggling with exactly the same things that she was. And so she finally thought, it's not me being a crap mum. This is how people respond when they have eating disorders. And you know, it was so, I think, refreshing, obviously not refreshing to hear that other people were struggling, but refreshing to know that other people didn't have the answers either. And it wasn't that she, you know, was unprepared as a mother. It was that this was something that nobody prepares you for, and actually often there is no right way to handle it. And like you've said, I often think, and this is life in general, not just in eating disorder recovery, but if something happens and it doesn't have the outcome that you hoped for, use it as a learning experience. And I know that's really easy to say, but, you know, if there's a situation where a massive argument occurs over a meal, you know, everybody takes some time to maybe cool down a little bit, but actually think, what happened there that led to that confrontational argument? You know, were there things that we could have recognized or put in place beforehand that would have meant that that could have gone smoother? Because now, retrospectively, looking back at my own eating disorder, you know, it's great with hindsight, but I can see where there's examples of things, you know, like conversations that were brought up at dinner time or distractions that could have been put in place pre and post meal that maybe wouldn't have cured me in a day, but might have made that process slightly easier on myself and on the rest of my family.
Yeah. And, you know, regardless of you know, the great content we have in Pillar and the great content there is in the Maudsley workshops and all of that. The one piece of feedback we get every time was, it was amazing to be in a space with other people going through something similar. And I mean, as I said, the numbers are so huge in Pillar. You know, when people first land in on that first meeting and they see the numbers going up, I always say, look at the amount of people who are here. Look at the amount of people around the country who are dealing with something as the same as you, something similar to you. And people always comment that that's in and of itself helpful, really helpful. Yeah. Mm. And, you know, the way we do Pillar Online like that, you know, there's been programs where I know that there's one set of parents in one Zoom window and then two sets of grandparents from different places in Ireland also on the Zoom call. And so, and they're all there supporting the same person. Yeah. And that happened once where we had parents, two sets of grandparents, and I think an auntie as well. And they had all come together to do Pillar to support this teenager. And I just thought that was phenomenal. It was amazing to be able to facilitate that, really. Yeah. And I suppose, Hannah, you know, there's also adults who are living with an eating disorder for a long time. And what I found is that, you know, some of the adult carers that we support have done the Maudsley workshops. That's what's so great about them, is that they're not just for, you know, the teenagers who are, you know, first time in treatment. They're also really helpful for those carers who are absolutely burnt out, who are at rock bottom in terms of energy to do anything, who have been living with an eating disorder in their house for 20, 30 years. You know, it's amazing to see them feel energized, feel like they have new ideas about how to do things differently. Because you can imagine, if you've been doing the same thing in your house for 20 years, it's very scary to think about changing it. And I actually feel huge, huge admiration for those carers, for people who have an adult. And I really feel like we need to provide more for them. I think that they always are, you know, the last group that we kind of think about. And I think that they have a really hard time.
Well, I think, you know, individuals that have been struggling with an eating disorder for a long period of time, they are often forgotten. But equally, I think people that have an adult onset eating disorder, there's very limited support. And I relapsed when I was 25. I was living with my partner.
Mm-hmm.
What, like, there was literally, you know, there was nothing. And I think equally it was very tricky because he didn't want to become a carer.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever I recommended, I found this thing that could be really helpful, but then it's just kind of like carer support for eating disorders. Yeah. I know we've used the word carer a lot in this episode, but I think that's another thing, in that there often isn't support for partners. And I guess there's sometimes a bit of a barrier to access because yeah. they just want a space to talk about the fact that their partner is yeah. not the person that they were.
Yeah. And there are, you know, there's a very small percentage, every Pillar program, who is a spouse or a partner. And I have to remind myself, and, you know, Christopher, who also does it, we have to remind ourselves to say at different points, I'm same parent, but it could be whoever. You know, it's not that the rules that apply to parents are entirely different to those that apply to a spouse. It is different, obviously, when you don't want a spouse to have to take on that caring role. And at the same time, there are lots of things that a spouse or a partner can do that could be very helpful.
I guess maybe just to finish this mm-hmm. off, if there are spouses, parents, carers, friends listening, what would you say is kind of the most helpful thing that someone can do if their loved one is struggling with an eating disorder? which I imagine varies for each person. So I've asked you a tricky question.
It's a very tricky question. I suppose what's coming to my mind now, and I could answer this maybe differently tomorrow, but what's coming to my mind in this moment is remember that you can't make the person do anything. What's really helpful is if you're able to meet your person where they're at, not where you want them to be. Yeah. So it's really about being able to come alongside them and be with them without putting pressure on them to get anywhere. It's more conducive for change if you do that than if you're always focused on where you want them to be. And that's a really difficult thing for a supporter, because to let go of the need to express where you want your person to be feels like you're giving up on them. And so a big part of the work that I find with families and supporters is helping them to understand, no, you're not giving up on them. You just recognize that by putting a whole load of energy into trying to make them be where you want them to be, you are taking away energy from being really supportive in the moment. So if you put the energy into meeting them where they're at, then that energy is much better used than the energy that you waste by saying, I want you to be able to eat 6 times a day. I want you to be able to stop exercising. I want you to be normal weight. I want you to go back to your, you know, all of those I want, I want, I want. So what do I mean by meet the person where they're at? Like, what does that actually mean? That actually means in your own head thinking about, you know, are you being led by where you want the person to be? And is that stopping you from being really supportive in this moment? So, for example, at a meal where the person is struggling and you're focused on they need to eat this because they have to eat whatever because that's, you know, where they need to be, rather than getting tied up in that and feeling like you're failing because you're not helping them to eat, to be able to just pull back and say, I can see this is really hard for you. Is there something that I can do that would be helpful in this moment? Or just, you know, I can see how hard you're trying, and leave it at that. No buts, no you need, none of that. Just be able to be in the moment. Put that full stop in, change your buts to ands. That's my big thing this year, changing my buts to ands. I'm trying not to say the word but, I'm trying to always say the word and, because it really changes the sound of what you say. It really changes the whole effect of what you say. But if there was one thing I would say to supporters, it would be that meet your person where they're at, not where you want them to be.
I think that's such a beautiful phrase, because I was just thinking as you were talking, living with an eating disorder, you constantly have a voice in your head telling you, do this, do that, you're not enough, do more, blah, blah, blah. And so having that in your head, and then another person out loud telling you, eat this, do this, exercise less, you know, you're not enough, basically, because you're not recovering, or you're not recovered. It's that constant push-pull. And to, I think for most people, the thing to do would be just to like completely retreat in and just try and block out all the noise. So I love your idea of saying to somebody, is there anything I can do to help? Or, you know, what's going on for you right now, rather than trying to push them to do something they don't want to do. Because actually, in that moment, for them to be able to say, oh, you know, my eating disorder is saying this, that and the other, to then talk about that out loud and process it, that really helped me personally anyway, to say things out loud, because then it wasn't all stored up in here. It didn't feel like you're going it alone. So I love that idea. And I think, yeah, meeting somebody is the Maudsley, right, where you have the dolphin of coming alongside. So yeah, that was a really nice way to finish that. So thank you so much, Harriet, for joining me today. It's been a pleasure to chat to you. So where can people go if they'd like to find out more about Bodywise?
Our website is bodywise.ie, and that's B-O-D-Y-W-H-Y-S. .ie. all information can be found there.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode on the Full of Beans podcast. I really hope you did enjoy it. As a little reminder, this is not a replacement for therapeutic advice, so please do seek support if you are struggling and know that there will always be somebody there to listen. Many thanks once again to our podcast sponsor, Nightingale Hospital. Have a lovely week, and I will see you next week for another episode of the Full of Beans podcast.